Over the next few weeks, we're exploring barbecue. Sit with us as we spread the coals, flip the hog, and stir them up. And along the way, we'll share stories of Southern pitmasters from Idaho to South Carolina. Our first stop is Kansas City.
In Kansas City, Missouri, barbecue is a big deal. The city is home to the American Royal Barbecue Hall of Fame and boasts more than 100 barbecue restaurants. Many consider it the best city in the Midwest for barbecue, but as we'll learn, and we're certainly not surprised by this news, the arguable king of Kansas City barbecue had Southern roots.
You're listening to Gravy.
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 A production of the Southern Foodways Alliance, Gravy tells the stories of the changing American South. I'm Melissa Hall.
And I'm Sarah Camp Milam.
After this quick message, Mackenzie Martin takes us to Kansas City.
For cultivating progress across the South, for working to unconditionally improve the lives of all, and for the bold underwriting of every Gravy podcast, SFA thanks our visionary Louisville, Kentucky friends, Pam and Brooke Smith.
So one of the first things you should know about Henry Perry is that he didn't get the name Barbecue King posthumously. He called himself the Barbecue King. He put it in newspaper ads. It was on the window of his restaurant. He also only spent half his life in Kansas City. He was born in Shelby County, Tennessee, near Memphis. And that's where he started learning how to barbecue at the young age of 7. By 15, he was professionally cooking on a steamboat that traveled up and down the Mississippi River, taking him to Chicago, Minneapolis, and finally, Kansas City. It's hard to know exactly why Perry settled down here in 1907, but KC did have a few things going for it that would have piqued the interest of a 30-something barbecue entrepreneur like Perry. A thriving meatpacking industry, so cheap meat, and an abundance of hardwood trees. But he didn't create barbecue in Kansas City. People were already doing it before he arrived. He was just the first guy to really make a living selling it, and he coined the local style. I also can't stress enough how good he was at selling things. He started out selling barbecue from a stand in an industrial part of Kansas City. There wasn't any refrigeration, but it didn't end up mattering, because every day, he sold out. A few years later, he moved his operation to Kansas City's historic 18th and Vine neighborhood, which was smart, because by the 1920s, there was a lot going on here. Political boss Tom Pendergast didn't enforce prohibition, so Kansas City was a wide-open town in the 20s. The liquor was free-flowing, and jazz was just starting to develop, late into the night. And barbecue? It went well with jazz. Both are still prominent in 18th and Vine today, which is where I headed on a fall day back in 2020 with Kansas City historian and tour guide, Eric Stafford.
Hey.
Hey, are you Eric Stafford?
I'm Eric, yeah.
I'm Mackenzie, nice to meet you.
Okay, good meeting you too.
We met outside the Blue Room, which is a popular jazz venue attached to the American Jazz Museum. All along the streets are these bright marquees and signs celebrating the city's historic jazz district. But it's relatively quiet for a Saturday night. Most people are downtown a few miles west of here.
Here in Kansas City, 12th Street, which is where jazz actually developed, is where they quarantined all the vice and kept it away from everybody. And as a result, the black community was very, very much saturated with vice. So drugs, prostitution, liquor, all that was heavily, easily accessible on 12th Street.
This was back in the Jim Crow era, when Kansas City was segregated. This area between 12th and 18th Street was the center of the black community and full of black-owned restaurants.
I mean, that was like what they had to do in order to survive, because blacks could not go anyplace else to receive goods and services or to eat.
Stafford says there was a little bit of everything, including but not limited to barbecue. While Henry Perry didn't establish the first commercial barbecue joint in the whole United States, even though he claimed he did at the time, his original stand is widely credited as Kansas City's first commercial barbecue joint, and he's often recognized as Kansas City's first barbecue restaurateur, as in the owner of the first standalone building with tables and a counter. The timeline gets a little fuzzy depending on who you ask, but over his long career, Perry's business savvy led him to own multiple restaurants. From 1915 to 1925, you could find him at 1514 East 19th Street, and later, his most famous location was at 19th and Highland.
So right here is where Henry Perry's barbecue stand was, right here. I think it was like his third one.
Both spots are residential areas within the historic Jazz District now. But back in 1932, the Kansas City Call described this particular location as a mecca for barbecue lovers. The newspaper writer even went so far as to claim Henry Perry was then nationally known as the Barbecue King, which is an interesting idea, since it was around this time that a number of New York City restaurants started selling Kansas City barbecue. For all of his business acumen, though, he was also extremely generous, always one to give out free food. And he was serious about hospitality. Inside his restaurant, he hung a sign that said, "My business is to serve you, not to entertain you." By the 1930s, people had started following his lead. There were close to 100 barbecue restaurants in the area. And while we may not know exactly what it looked like, we definitely know what it smelled like.
The odor was definitely apparent. Like it is today. Like if you were to drive by Gates Barbecue down here on 12th Street, you would smell it in the air.
His food had an aroma that stayed with you. And that's what made them want to come back to him.
That's Sonny Gibson, another local Kansas City historian.
You want to eat me a little snack?
And I should probably point out, when we met up, he was eating a barbecue sandwich.
Barbecue turkey, yeah. You want some?
No, I have already eaten.
But he admitted it wasn't as good as what Henry Perry was wrapping up in newspaper back in the day.
He smoked barbecue better than anybody. And they traveled from as far as Leavenworth, Kansas, Omaha, Nebraska, places like that. They would come down just to eat his food.
Part of what was alluring about Perry was his process. According to Perry, there was only one way to cook barbecue, slow-cooked over a fire made from hickory and oak wood with the meat juices dripping directly on the coals. Another important thing for you to know, we were not picky in this city about what we barbecued.
He barbecued and he cooked everything. Raccoons, coons, rabbits.
Possum, hog, mutton. Part of the reason his meat selection was rather eclectic is because meatpacking plants at the time were discarding meat they thought of as useless. Ribs, brisket. Historian Andrea Broomfield thinks that resulted in a bootleg market for meat. Here she is at an event for KCUR's podcast, A People's History of Kansas City, in 2020.
If you were able to go to the packing plants and scavenge, you could probably pick up some good pieces and barbecue it for free. And I think that Perry might have been doing that.
Supposedly, one of Henry Perry's stands was right by a track where a train would turn around and bootleg meat would fall off.
Perry or his assistant, Mr. Bryant, would go out, pick it up, bring it in, barbecue it, and you'd be eating it.
And like any good barbecue pitmaster, Perry also had very strong feelings about sauce. Kansas City is known today for its thick, sweet, and tangy sauce. But Perry's original was a lot more extreme.
I associate it with cayenne pepper, and definitely vinegar, lard, no tomato to speak of, certainly no sugar, more maybe in the North Carolina tradition than it would be in what we associate with most Kansas City barbecue, which is molasses, tomato.
According to local accounts, the sauce was so fiery it would literally bring tears to customers' eyes. But based on all that we know of Perry's barbecue skills, we can safely assume that all of it, raccoon, possum, mutton, was pretty tasty, right? Sonny Gibson isn't so sure.
Aren't you a little curious what it would taste like?
No, I'm not curious. No way. Ain't nobody gonna eat no barbecue raccoon.
Not everyone today feels that way, though.
I've eaten coon before. It has a real pleasant taste, coon does.
James Watts is the ombudsman at the Black Archives of Mid-America. And in addition to being less appalled by Perry's meat choices than anyone else I talked to, he credits Perry's marketing and business savvy with what got people to come from all over.
Let me put it to you like this. Perry was the guy that stood up, wanted to make a living doing something that he liked doing. There probably were other people that barbecued that might have been a better barbecuer than Perry in their backyard or their front yard or at the park or something like that. But then he was a businessman.
Remember, Henry Perry didn't create barbecue in Kansas City. It was already something people were doing socially.
You know, you have a party and you go on barbecue.
But from the start, Perry was just exceptionally good at marketing and selling it. And this attracted a diverse customer base, too. Perry's customers were equally divided between white and black, all with the common ambition, according to the local newspaper, to sink their teeth into Perry's succulent barbecue.
Here's something that's so significant. White people would come down for jazz and barbecue, but then black people couldn't live in their neighborhoods. We could work for them, but then we couldn't do business with them in most cases. But white people always liked our jazz and food, one being barbecue.
How do I put this? You could walk in through the front door, you would see black and white people. There was no segregation. And they would just sit there, enjoy the barbecue and all like that. It was a place where segregation ended when you walked through the door. People was just hospitable, and they loved to sit there and eat barbecue.
It's not like barbecue was the great unifier. But like jazz at the time, Watts says, it was a place where black and white people coexisted in ways they weren't doing elsewhere.
So I'm pretty sure that it didn't happen a lot, but I think maybe there were some friendships and relationships that came from a white person being at the restaurant and a black person just happened to be there. Because people find out they got something in common.
But barbecue doesn't become a Kansas City institution with just one man. When Henry Perry died of pneumonia in 1940, his influence didn't end. In a sense, it tripled. That's because he had three notable apprentices who went on to cook barbecue for the two most historically famous barbecue restaurants in Kansas City. Arthur Pinkard became the pitmaster at the first Gates Barbecue of many, permanently cementing the Henry Perry style of barbecue with Gates for generations. The other, more famous men that Henry Perry trained were Texas brothers Arthur and Charlie Bryant. Charlie took over 19th and Highland when Perry died, even though he had already started his own business nearby. And then together with his brother Arthur, the Bryants created what has become Arthur Bryant's Barbecue today, all the while crediting Henry Perry with teaching them everything they knew. It all makes you wonder, would Kansas City even be known for barbecue without Henry Perry? Eric Stafford doesn't think so.
So you could say that the Kansas City style of barbecue comes from Henry Perry.
It's Perry we can thank for creating Kansas City's barbecue institution, a variety of meats served smothered in tangy sauce. Why then does nobody know about him?
When we come back, we'll learn how, until recently, the average Kansas Cityan didn't know who Henry Perry was, even some of his relatives.
Do you know cast iron does some of its best work outside? Whether you're cooking over the campfire or a grill, Lodge cast iron skillets, griddles, and grill baskets bring the taste of summer to your next food adventure. Their camp and Dutch ovens love to tag along too, helping you bring favorite recipes to the great outdoors. Crafted in America with just iron and oil, Lodge cast iron helps you turn every meal into an outdoor masterpiece. Go to lodgecastiron.com to shop the full collection and savor the outdoors. For Lodge's longtime support of the Southern Foodways Alliance and this podcast, we thank them.
Anyone who loves Kansas City barbecue owes its existence to Henry Perry. But according to Kansas City historian Michael Sweeney, a lot of his story is still a mystery. Perry's early life was fairly transient. Therefore, it's hard to find much of a trace of him in city directories or official censuses. It's rumored that he's buried somewhere in Mississippi County, Arkansas, after his body was shipped to a half-brother. But nobody seems to know for sure. Here in Kansas City, the restaurants he helped create, Gates and Arthur Bryant's, they're extremely well-known. But until relatively recently, not that many people knew very much about who Henry Perry was, including his own descendants.
I am Bernetta McKendra, and I am the granddaughter of Henry Perry.
When I first called up Bernetta McKendra, she told me she wasn't sure if she wanted to be interviewed, in large part because she didn't know much about her grandfather. She never met him, and she didn't grow up hearing stories about him from her mother or her grandmother either.
He just wasn't talked about. It was just known that he was the barbecue king, and that was pretty much it. It was not until I started to read and got older and saw other publications that I began to know that, oh, I think he really is someone.
One of those moments of realization came when McKendra found out that Henry Perry had been inducted into the American Royal Barbecue Hall of Fame.
This is how it got started. In 2017, I was with a bus tour. We went to the Mackinac Islands, and there was a gentleman that was sitting behind me.
They were talking about food, which naturally evolved into a conversation about Kansas City barbecue. And he started telling her about this famous barbecuer who had recently been inducted into the Barbecue Hall of Fame. You can probably guess where I'm going here.
Well, I'm sitting there. He couldn't remember Henry Perry's name. He said, well, the gentleman, he said, the guy that's responsible for barbecue in Kansas City, something like that. So in turn, I turned around and I said, oh, you mean Henry Perry? He looked real funny. He said, yes. And so I said, that's my grandfather. And just the moment and just remembering the look on his face, you know, like, how cool was that?
It should be noted, though, that she didn't find out about Henry Perry's induction into the Barbecue Hall of Fame until years after it happened. Perry was inducted in 2014, which, from my perspective, is far too late. Both Guy Fieri and Henry Ford were inducted 2 years before him in 2012. That being said, I don't necessarily blame the American Royal. The World Series of Barbecue might be based here in Kansas City, but it's not like Kansas City has been giving Henry Perry tons of credit over the years either, at least not as much as he deserves. And I'm far from the first person to bring this up. There's this 1972 Playboy article by journalist Calvin Trillin that is regularly cited as proof of Kansas City's barbecue excellence, specifically the part where Calvin Trillin calls Arthur Bryant's the single best restaurant in the world. But the part that was recently brought to my attention is at the end of the article, and by far more interesting. It's when Trillin writes, "What I can't understand is why this town is full of statues of the farmers who came out to steal land from the Indians, and full of statues of the businessmen who stole the land from the farmers, but doesn't even have a $3 plaque somewhere for Henry Perry." That was 50 years ago, and we still don't have a plaque for Henry Perry. Though there was a petition circled around last year to name an airport terminal after him. Unfortunately, it only got 363 signatures. Many Kansas Cityans probably heard about Henry Perry for the first time in July 2020, when he was honored with the city's inaugural Henry Perry Day, exactly a century after he fed 1,000 Kansas Cityans for free, specifically children and the elderly, on the lawn next to his restaurant. The celebration fell during a tumultuous time in the United States, less than 6 weeks after the murder of George Floyd, when municipalities and businesses everywhere were going through a major racial reckoning. Bernetta McKendra found out about Henry Perry Day when she was out shopping with her friend, who saw the news in a local newspaper.
And she said, Bernetta, that's your grandfather, right? And so I said, yes. And so the other two salespeople that were in the store, they kind of looked like, yeah, right. But
at this point in time, she'd been researching her grandfather for a few years. But it wasn't until then that it really sunk in for her how important her grandfather's legacy was to the entire institution of Kansas City barbecue.
It was a glorious time. It was really a time of reckoning that not only was this man being recognized, but he also was my blood relative, you know, was my grandfather, which was close kin.
To commemorate Henry Perry on that day, Kansas City area barbecue establishments donated their supplies and time to prepare 1,000 free meals, and then they gave them away to local charities.
Just being there when they read the proclamation, that was really something.
I think we can all agree that Henry Perry Day happening in 2020 is great. But shouldn't something like this have happened sooner? For just a moment, imagine Bernetta McKendra growing up in a Kansas City where she saw her grandfather's name everywhere. Maybe there was a fountain named after him, or a street. It would have been impossible for her to go as long as she did without realizing how important he was.
The thing that's been most interesting to me is his tenacity. What was in the heart of this man? What was in the mind of this man, especially during that time, being a black man and coming from the steamboats? What was the drive that kept him going? It's very humbling to me. It's something that I'm not taking for granted, that I have that same DNA because he is my grandfather.
Today, you can't smell Henry Perry's barbecue in downtown Kansas City, but you can smell Gates at 12th and Brooklyn and Arthur Bryant's at 18th and Brooklyn. Elsewhere, there's Joe's, LC's, Jackstack, Q39, and countless others. Many of these restaurants wouldn't be here, and KC might not even be known for its barbecue if it wasn't for Henry Perry. And while they might not all cook the meat on a bed of hickory and oak like Perry did, they're still carrying on the tradition of barbecue excellence in Kansas City that he started in the early 1900s, drawing people from cities and towns far away. These days, there's just less possum on the menu.
Gravy was reported and produced by Mackenzie Martin, a podcast producer and reporter at KCUR. She helps make A People's History of Kansas City and Hungry for Mo. Get it?
An earlier version of this story aired on the KCUR Studios podcast, A People's History of Kansas City, and was nominated for a James Beard Award.
Special thanks for this episode go to KCUR Studios' Suzanne Hogan, Will Gregory at the American Royal, author Doug Wargle, the Black Archives of Mid-America, and the Kansas City Public Library.
We thank Wendell Patrick for Gravy's theme music and Jazar for our donor music.
Managing editor for Gravy and all other SFA publications is my co-host, Sarah Camp Milam. Gravy's publisher is Mary Beth Lassiter. The heavy editing lift for this season of Gravy comes by way of Olivia Terenzio. And Katie King is our fact checker.
Did this episode whet your appetite for barbecue? Of course it did. Join us for our barbecue symposium, October 21st and 22nd, here in Oxford, Mississippi. Together, we'll ask questions about what barbecue is, who makes it, and we'll learn how the craft is changing. Visit us at southernfoodways.org to buy your tickets and learn more about the event.
While you're there, we'd be much obliged if you'd consider becoming a member or making a donation. Your dollars fund our work, and they help us make more gravy. I'm Melissa Hall.
And I'm Sarah Camp Milam. Excited to lap up another episode of Gravy? Tell a friend.
Pass the gravy boat. There's plenty to go around.